Little Emily biting her sister, or is teenage Barry refusing to help around the house? Consulting psychologist David Carey joins us to answer all your parenting woes. It's time once again to wade through the tidal waters of luminous yellow poo, known as the parenting slot. There was a reference to that earlier on, David. I don't expect you to understand what the hell I'm talking about.
I do not, but that's probably the worst introduction I have ever had, ever.
No, it was because somebody said earlier on that they got a bit of a shock when they had a baby, because you know the baby poos meconium, which is kind of bright yellow, and they thought their child was radioactive or something for the first couple of weeks.
Oh my god.
Right, anyway, my brother and his partner are expecting their third child, a little girl who unfortunately has a condition called Edwards syndrome and is not expected to survive birth but may live a few hours. As you can appreciate, we are a close family and are all coming to terms with this as best we can. The pregnancy is not being discussed with the other kids, who are 1 and 3, as initially the older girl didn't notice. And as a baby will not be coming home, it is just not something talked about. My brother and his partner are concerned that after the birth there will be a sense of loss in the whole family, which the three-year-old will in all probability pick up. When mentioned in the hospital, it was suggested to take the three-year-old into the hospital to see her sister, who will have passed away. They are unsure if this would be a good idea for a three-year-old who, at present, is unaware. They wonder, would a discussion be more appropriate, perhaps a little less traumatic? We'd appreciate your thoughts and suggestions.
Well, I feel it a great loss to give any directions in a situation like this, except to say that the practitioners in the hospital are experienced with this sort of thing, and regrettably they will have encountered it on more than one occasion, and are probably offering their most knowledgeable advice based on experience. Now, this is a tricky situation because the three-year-old isn't being informed that mother is pregnant. And it's, of course, true that the whole family will be grieving. And they're wondering, will the child pick this up? Of course the child will pick this up. There will be tears. There will be muffled discussions. There will be hugs and facial expressions of grief and sadness. It will be enormously confusing for a child to see and hear all of this and not know what's going on. That's being treated as if you're living a psychosis. Reality is there before you, but you are compelled to deny that it is actually happening.
Yeah.
The truth is probably the best way out of this rather horrific set of circumstances. I can't even begin to imagine the pain of the mother and the father of this as of yet unborn child. But I think it's time to sit down with the little girl. Whether or not she should be brought in to view the body of the child is a question that I don't really feel competent to answer.
Yeah.
I would defer to the knowledge base of the clinicians in the hospital, who have a lot of experience with these very tragic circumstances and who have dealt with it before. The little brother is one. I don't think we need to worry about the one-year-old child much. Now, if any of our listeners have experience with this and can offer some advice based on their own life experience, I think it would be welcome to this family. You know, my heart aches for them, first of all. But I think it really is best to tell the truth to this little three-year-old child and let her know that mommy's having a baby, but the baby's very, very unwell and might not live. And at least she'll be prepared and be able, in her very limited three-year-old capacity, to comprehend what will be happening around her. Because how are you going to hide the grief?
Yeah.
You can't.
No, you can't hide the grief.
You can't.
No.
So, and that's even worse, to try to hide it. So give her a framework as best as you can for understanding this. If mommy or daddy can't do that, that's when a family member steps in.
Yeah.
And talks to the three-year-old about it. Keep it brief. Keep it to the point. Be prepared to answer any questions you may get from her succinctly and concretely.
Yeah.
Don't overinterpret the question as to what it might mean. Just answer the question. And if she doesn't ask questions, leave it at that. Mm. Talk to the people in the hospital a little bit more, I think, about why they believe that's the best course. I think it's time to ask them, have you done this before with a three-year-old? Why are you advising this? What's your experience? What have you seen when you did it before? You need a bit more input, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's funny because I was reading a thing the other day that in the Western world, slightly different to this, but if a woman has a miscarriage, we don't really do anything about it.
Yeah.
In Ireland, I think it's the case in Britain and the States as well. But in Japan, they have these things called Jizo dolls, spelled J-I-Z-O. And in cemeteries, people bring a Jizo doll and they leave it there and they leave flowers beside it. And it's a way of kind of grieving for a miscarriage. It's kind of a lovely, a very sad kind of
it is,
tradition.
It's a good tradition. Mm. And of course, that's culturally embedded because in most Asian cultures, there's a strong tradition of ancestor worship and behaving in such a way that you confer honor upon your ancestors. That is not our culture.
Yeah. I think the idea is that an unborn baby hasn't had time, doesn't get into heaven because they haven't done anything. But Jizo was this little kind of mischievous, kind of like an angel or something. And he puts all the unborn babies in his pockets and smuggles them into heaven.
Is that it?
So
intriguing. I must look that up now. I hadn't heard of that.
I know so many adult siblings who do not speak to their brothers or sisters. I had my children close together so they will have company growing up. Ideally, I would like them to always want to be in each other's lives. I know life is complex, but I felt it was worth asking the question, is there anything you can do as a parent to help siblings make a real connection with each other so that they remain lifelong friends? That's funny, actually, because we do a kind of this slot on a Monday for adults where they kind of send in questions. And there was one very similar to that.
Really?
Where somebody was worried that their siblings were going to stop completely talking to each other. But so many people text in afterwards to say, I haven't spoken to my brother in 25 years. Don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard of that. I don't have any brothers and sisters, so I have no firsthand experience. The best way to assure that your children will get along and be lifelong friends, does that mean they will never have quarrels, by the way, and falling out? Of course not. Is to model it yourself. Be friendly to all of them. Be friendly to your partner and your siblings as parents. We create a loving and extended family. We forgive each other for arguments. It's very good for children to see their parents forgiving each other and apologizing for their mistakes and their occasional slip-ups and wrongdoings. And if you live your life that way, all will be well.
Yeah. Do you have to teach children how to argue in the sense that sometimes you see kids, they have arguments with other kids and it's a zero-sum game. They don't know how to come back from...
Well, maybe sometimes for some children. Arguing is part of human life, and some people are really good at it. Arguing does not involve logic, of course. Logic goes out the window. It's all raw emotion. And people say things that they don't mean to say or shouldn't have said. So sometimes we have to help children understand. Please say you're sorry and explain what you're sorry for. And make it clear what you'll try to do next time so as not to make the same mistake again. And if you do that and you coach the child through it, that can be very helpful in terms of what you're saying, teach them how to argue. But a lot of adults don't know how to do that
well.
Well,
no, that's what I mean. Yeah. That is absolutely true.
We can't teach what we can't live.
Yeah.
So therein lies a problem. If you're not a fair fighter, you can't teach your children to be a fair fighter. Mm.
Because I suppose you have to learn it's okay to have an argument. It's not the end of the world. It's perfectly natural to have an argument, but that argument's come to an end.
Yeah, and it should come to an end. And that brings us to the first part of the issue here, this lifelong grudge holding that siblings or extended family members, not unique to siblings. I mean, I come from a long line of grudge holders, in fact, intergenerational. My beloved aunt, there were two generations of people before her, that she hadn't exchanged a word with them in 45 or 50 years and would never entertain such a thing. Mm. That was my model for arguing and how you deal with conflict, you know?
Yeah, because I know people whose families are like that as well.
Yeah.
God, it's very hard.
It's just very hard to live through this crazy thing we call life.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it is. But I listen to my own kids. Well, certainly my daughters. I you know, like, they squabble with each other all the time.
Yeah.
And they say, "Oh my God, I hate you so much," every day.
But they
know, and I know, and the one who's saying it to the other one know it's nothing.
That's an important point, because sometimes we can do a bit more damage by jumping in there and explaining, "You don't really mean hate."
Yeah.
Well, yes, I do, actually. Because it doesn't register to the sibling listener the same way it registers to the adult overhearing.
Yeah.
It's just part of the argy-bargy of life. I hate you. You're making my life miserable. Sometimes children will say that to their parents, you know. I hate you. You don't love me.
We're getting a huge reaction to the first question we had. This is about the little little girl who's got Edwards syndrome and isn't expected to live for very long after birth. My friend's Edwards baby is now 8 weeks old. They were given the same advice as that couple with regard to their three-year-old. In hindsight, they wish they were honest and said the baby will be poorly and might go straight to heaven, but might come home. Says one texter. Somebody on Twitter says, please put that family in touch with Soft Ireland, softireland.com, for support of babies with Edwards syndrome. So there is some place you can perhaps go for more advice. My father was an undertaker and always said that a death doesn't feel real until you touch the body. This is maybe why they're suggesting the three-year-old see the baby, as it evokes a primal feeling that doesn't need words to convey what has happened. That may be a factor in it. We had a baby with Edwards syndrome. Her name is Marianne. She was with us for 2 months. We would be happy to talk to the couple if they wished, says Shane. Thank you very much for that, Shane.
Lovely.
We lost a baby to Patau syndrome. I'm sorry if I'm not pronouncing that correctly. P-A-T-A-U. A similar condition to Edwards. Our older child was 3 at the time and knew I was pregnant. We didn't find out there was anything wrong with the baby until her premature birth. We explained to our 3-year-old that her sister was born very sick and had died and gone to heaven. We held a funeral for the baby and made sure our daughter was part of that, but she did not see the baby as we felt she was very young and the baby did not look like a small child might expect a baby to look like. I think children are very accepting of the facts if they're told the truth. My heart goes out to that family. Thanks very much for all the responses to that. And we got loads besides that. That's just a small smattering we got. Next question is this. After a lot of thought, we've decided to move our 3 children to a new school next September. We have many reasons for this, but the main factors are many of the teachers we liked have left and we're not happy with the sports program there. All of our 3 kids love sports, so this is a big issue for us. I'm writing to ask your advice on how and when to tell the kids. They are age 9, 7 and 5. The new school is around the corner and they will be able to play sports, so I think they will be happy, but I want to handle it properly. Any tips would be greatly appreciated.
This is a great example of the difference between doing something for the children and doing something to the children. We have decided... We have many reasons. We liked the teachers, but they're gone. We're not happy with the sports program there. All our 3 kids love sport, so this is a big issue for us.
Yeah.
I think, listeners, we know where we're going here. You're doing it to the children. Mm-hmm. Has anyone bothered to ask the children if they want to move schools? Has anyone talked to the children about the sports program? You have a 9-year-old here.
Yeah.
He's going to leave, or she, all his friends into a strange new world and a new environment. And the magical thinking is, well, we'll put a slither in his hand and he's just going to be as happy as Larry because now he's in a good sporty school. I'm not happy with this question, in case anyone couldn't get the question already. Because it really illustrates to me something I've often talked about. Parents, ask yourself, am I doing it for the children or to the children? If you're doing it to the children, you're probably doing it for you, and that's the wrong reason.
Mm.
So my advice, talk to the children.
Okay. Well, this person probably thinks they're doing it for the best reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So?
Yeah. So, but they haven't. But should you ask a 5-year-old? Do you want to?
No, you don't ask if you want to move schools. You ask, are you happy in your school? Do you like your teachers? You know, are you having any fun during break time? How are your lessons go? You ask open-ended questions. The child will tell you everything if they think you want to know. Are the children expressing unhappiness and dissatisfaction with the sports program? Nothing in the question alerts me to that. I don't know.
This is true. This is true.
Sorry about that.
Sorry about that. Now you're sorry asked. My 3.5-year-old son has started stuttering with his words, especially at starts of sentences with words like mammy. This usually happens when he's excited and wanting to tell us information. He's into superheroes and Star Wars, and it happens a lot when telling me stories about these. The creche staff have been telling him to slow down, which is helping, although I've been reading about it and it says not to acknowledge it as it can make him more self-conscious. Any advice?
Way to deal with it is to do nothing at all. He's only 3.5. It will probably slow down. Stammering is not unusual at that age. I wouldn't make a big deal about it. If it's radically interfering with intelligibility, then you may wish to consult a speech and language therapist to see if anything actually needs to be done about it. Generally speaking, the more attention you draw to it, the more of a, to use that overused phrase, complex you can give the child about the condition. So I think Presh maybe, oh, look, they're trying to do the right thing. I would wonder how often they're saying it to him. You know, once in a while to say, okay, take your time.
Yeah.
Deep breath. Now, go. That may be all right. But if it's too much, then it probably is wrongheaded and not helpful. You know, stammering occurs, generally speaking, goes away. 3.5-year-old, we don't want to raise the red flags just yet. At age 4.5, is it the same or getting worse? Speech and language therapist consultation will solve the problems.
My daughter's in junior infants. When her workbooks and writing books come home, the teacher has written critical remarks and comments in red, including negative comments about colouring and not being neat. I think this is too much and I'm very upset. The parent-teacher meeting is next week. Should I bring it up and how should I address it? Oh, God, I'm actually scared to hear what David's answer is going to be on this one.
Well, I'm going to tell you what to do. The next time that copybook comes home, I want you to write in big red letters, and I'm serious, I do not appreciate the way you are constantly criticizing my child's work in this book. Stop it. And circle it in red and underscore it. And let the chips fall where they may. When you go back to that teacher-parent-teacher meeting, you make your point very clearly and very assertively. We do not speak to our child like this at home. And we're not going to accept it when you do the same things to our child. I want it stopped. You wait a week. If it hasn't stopped, march yourself up to the school principal. Time to raise holy hell. First of all, who cares whether a child colors neatly in junior infants? That is nonsense and rubbish. There is no need, parents, for children to color between the lines. I've said this so many times, till my color is now blue in the face. We don't do that. Copybooks in junior infant class, wrong-headed for the most part, but that regrettably is what we're stuck with. Your job is to protect your child from undue criticism and negativity. That is your responsibility. And I want you to exercise your responsibility. And if it were me, I would be writing in red in that copybook, and I'd just be saying, stop it. I won't take it anymore.
But this little girl's in junior infants. She mightn't be able to read the blinking comments in the book. So it seems like they're aimed specifically at the parents.
Well, that could be. But also, every child in every school knows what something in red
means.
Circled means. It means you did something wrong. You're no good at something.
Yeah.
And that's not messages we want to give children, particularly at this age. The best predictor of a good ending is a good beginning. Junior infants is the beginning. If you begin with constant criticism and nasty remarks about your efforts to try to do schoolwork, you're not going to progress very smoothly through school.
My 5-year-old son would start crying during the sleep every night at 1 a.m. After calming him down, he will come to our room for a few hours later saying he had a bad dream and would refuse to leave the room. Sometimes we notice he's trying to manipulate or get in our bed. This keeps going on for months. How should we deal with that?
Well, he can't refuse to leave the room if you pick him up and escort him back into his room and you give him a nice cuddle and a nice kiss and you say, good night, honey. You may have to do that 15 times the first night, 10 the second. second, five the third, but you will eliminate that behavior. Let's first of all find out if there's any genuine distress happening to this little fellow. Has he got a tummy problem? Has he eaten something that isn't agreeing with him? Is there a lactose issue here? What's waking him up at the night and that he's in the middle of the night and crying? Don't know. That needs observation, thought, and gathering a little bit of information.
Yeah.
But you don't want him in your bedroom and he's refusing? No, he can't refuse. It's very gentle and very loving. Honey, boys your age sleep in their own room. We love you so much. Now let's go back into your room. The gentle, low arousal technique will work, and you'll have to apply it repeatedly, but it will work.
Yeah. Right, one last question. Again, this is a bit of a sad one. Our brother died suddenly 18 months ago, leaving his wife and five kids. The youngest is four, the oldest is 14. My sister-in-law now has a new boyfriend. We're all very happy for her, but as a family, we are concerned for the kids. Is this too soon? They still talk about their daddy, and the younger ones ask for him now and again. The six-year-old asked me who the new boyfriend was, and was it a new daddy? I had no idea what to say. I spend a lot of time with the kids, and I'm fielding these questions for some time now. What should I do?
Thank you. You need to talk to your sister or sister-in-law, I think it is in this case, and let her know that the children are asking these questions, that she needs to sit down and talk to the children about the new boyfriend. You're all now, as a family, concerned for the kids. I question that now. Why are we so concerned for the kids when the mother has moved on after a wrenching heartbreak and loss to find love again? That's a wonderful thing. That's a new person in this family that the children may one day love, should the relationship last. We don't know.
Yeah.
These things need to be normalized. There's nothing wrong with moving on like this. It's healthy. We all need love. We all need someone who cares about us. So do these children. I'm sure their mother cares deeply about them. You are concerned? Please speak to your sister-in-law.
Yeah.
Let her know the children are asking questions, because the questions need to be answered by her,
yeah,
not by you. Don't step in.
And it's kind of almost implied that because they still talk about their daddy, they couldn't accept the mother's new boyfriend. One doesn't necessarily exclude the other at all.
Of course not. No, they're not mutually exclusive. And sure, they should always remember their daddy.
Mm.
And there should be pictures in the home. Even should these two people now form a love relationship and move in together, there should be pictures in the children's room of the daddy. You should have enough security in your heart as the new partner to recognize everyone has a past.
Yeah.
And in this case, someone's heart was broken. They loved this person, and it is the children's father. So accept that as a reality and cherish the fact that they love their daddy, and maybe they will learn to love you too in a different kind of way.
Yeah.
It's all normal. It's all okay. Just don't worry about it.
Listen in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. here on Moncrief for more parenting advice from David Carey.
Not too much.